What's up? It's Ross, and I've got a couple of quick announcements before today's show. They are important, so don't skip this, or you will dishonor your family. First, a reminder, Barrett and I went and saw Dune Part 2 in theaters, then we recorded an hour-long discussion and review of the film, which is available for you to enjoy exclusively on patreon.com/oystersclamscockles. And you may be thinking, I would love to enjoy that discussion and review of Dune Part 2. You can, and it won't cost you a dime. Right now on patreon.com/oystersclamscockles, you can sign up for a 7-day free trial. That's 7 days of membership for free and enjoy our entire discussion and review of Dune Part 2 in either audio form by joining the Clam Fam tier or have video as an option by joining the Mollusk Militia tier. In addition to our Dune Part 2 discussion and review, subscribing on Patreon will also give you access to the other movies we've discussed and reviewed over the years, such as Oppenheimer, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Parasite, Interstellar, Joker, Casino Royale, Tenet, 1917, Ex Machina, Saltburn, The Talented Mr. Ripley, and more. You can see all the movies we have discussed and reviewed by clicking on the Movie Club collection of our Patreon. And of course, patreon.com/oystersclamscockles is also home to our entire companion podcast for every single episode of HBO's classic crime drama, The Sopranos, along with our weekly bonus coverage of Shogun, as well as bonus coverage for House of the Dragon, Succession, The White Lotus, The Last of Us, Foundation, Silo, and True Detective Night Country. When you join, you immediately gain access to our entire backlog of ad-free premium content. We're talking years and years of OCC you have never heard or seen if you've never been on our Patreon. And again, right now it's completely free for you to join for 7 days, and then it's just $5 per month for the Clam Fam tier, or $10 per month to join the Mollusk Militia, where you also gain full access to video of most episodes if you are a YouTube watcher and you want to go that route, plus the Mollusk Militia exclusive hotline for a chance to be featured on the show, and the Mollusk Militia exclusive Discord as well. All of this while supporting your favorite podcast. What a deal! Act now, as this 7-day free trial won't be available forever. Also, we appreciate you being here with us to enjoy Shogun, and remind you that we started off as a Game of Thrones podcast way back in the day, so obviously we hope to be your go-to companion podcast when House of the Dragon returns for Season 2 this June. Our show is available not only on all the major podcast platforms, but also on youtube.com/@oystersclamscockles as well. So subscribe, rate, review, comment, and share our show with those you know. Thank you very much. Now let's dive into Chapter 9 of Shogun, titled Crimson Sky. Welcome back for another helping of oysters, clams, and katanas, presented by Bolin Media. I am Ross Bolin Sama, here today with Barrett Dudley Sama to digest and discuss the 9th and penultimate episode of Shogun from Hulu/FX, titled Crimson Sky. Mr. Barrett Dudley, welcome back.
Yes.
We're here.
It was the penultimate, and it delivered on its penultimate promise, the PP, if you will.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to hearing what you have to say about this one.
Yeah.
I got mixed signals from our text message exchange last night.
Okay.
And I don't know where you stand currently. It's more fun for me when I come in and I have literally no idea if you enjoyed it or you hated it. So,
no, we can start there. No, I thought this was a good episode. I thought that this continues to be just like extremely high level TV making, you know, like they're just doing things that are pretty that are just kind of like next level TV shit, like
high quality
stuff. I mean, in a scene like the one that stood out to me from this episode is just like to set up something that is so like nerve-wracking and tension-filled, and it's just Mariko trying to leave a castle.
Yeah,
like that's genius shit right there. To like all she's doing is leaving. That's it, and it's just like it's the most tense thing that you've watched in months, right? You know what I mean? So it's just like they still are executing at a really really high level, just overall production-wise, acting-wise, everything. There's some stuff with the story right now that we're now into, like, we're being, like, purposely obfuscated, you know? We've got the wool drawn over our eyes We're being misled. We're being misdirected. And then, obviously, just to jump right to the end of the episode, I don't know why we're just, like, for Torunaga to now execute a plan, which I'm not sure if he had until his son died, but now he has because he's got the extra time. But now, in order to enact this plan, he needs all of his best people to go kill themselves.
Yeah, I don't.
So that whole thing, like to lose Hiramatsu in one episode, and then the very next one, we're losing Mariko. Like, that's kind of who's he going to have left except for a bunch of plebs?
Like, what? My question continues to be, but why?
Right, right, right.
Like, what? How is he better off now?
Yeah.
Than he was. Before, and like I'm really, really excited to discuss this one today because I'm hoping you and I can kind of like
figure
some of this out.
Because
don't get me wrong, I'm with you. This was an incredible episode of TV. It was very, very stressful, almost unenjoyable at different times. I had to watch this one alone. My wife fell asleep, and I don't like watching really stressful stuff by myself.
Yeah,
I like being able to share it.
Yeah.
And it was rough, man.
Yeah.
I hope I understand the decision to make Shogun just one season after we watched the finale, because they pretty easily could have given us two seasons of this show based on what we've seen so far.
Yeah.
And it feels like the world would have been a better place for it, because like you said, this is very high-quality TV being made here.
I tend to agree. We had a little bit of a discussion about this in our group chat, just about how this, I mean, it's a huge novel. I think it's like 800 pages or something like that, maybe even more.
Ton of material, yeah.
And so it does absolutely seem like they could have gone two seasons with it.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that they needed to stretch it to three. They could have. I'm sure they could have. It seems like there's a lot to plumb here. But even just like, just to call back to episode 8, which I didn't get to touch on much, like, you know, we get there were no kind of like, there could have been like a few little setup scenes to maybe indicate they wouldn't have had to like tell us explicitly, but just like a little drop here or there to be like, yeah, Torunaga has spies. Ishida has spies too. And it might be that dude sitting over there in the corner, just so you know, kind of like going in. Or you at least have an idea. You can start to maybe theorize that, like, when it's happening, that this is a performance that Hiramatsu is putting on. This is a ruse. It's the most, it's the most next level type of
the highest level version of a ruse.
Commitment to a ruse, because somebody kills themselves to pull it off. But like, do you know what I mean? Just to like to have a little bit more of an understanding of why they had to do that to get to the next step of the plan.
Yeah, I mean that scene that you're calling back to, that you and I did not get to talk about last week because you were out, was probably the most complex that the show has delivered so far.
Yeah,
just because you're like, not only are you asking yourselves, like, wait, how are they better off because of this? And like, how does this function? And frankly, you watch that scene, you're very confused by it, right? I watched it two more times before I was like, okay, he definitely was, like, obviously, Torunaga gives us that line at the end of the episode to Mariko where he's like,
right,
my friend Hiramatsu knew his duty well.
Yes, it's not until the conversation with Mariko where he essentially confirms that this was a part of the new plan. And then he's like, they have to think that I'm actually defeated. But then there's no explanation for how they're going to think that.
And then I'm
or
expecting
how they're
like
know that.
Okay, well then we're gonna see clearly in the penultimate episode how Hiramatsu's death pays off, and let's start there. Let's jump into episode 9 with that as like our end talking point about episode 8, because that was one thing that I was like, I better get a really good feel for what Hiramatsu's sacrifice provided in the next episode. Okay, so we open episode 9 cold open with a flashback to a pregnant Tota Mariko attempting and failing to escape the Shonai region. It's 14 years ago, in the snow, brutally cold winter, and we find out she's tried to escape three times. She just wants to die. And Father Alvito is brought in to attempt to help her. This is where their relationship begins.
Awesome.
And yeah, he's telling her that he too has experienced sadness and loss, but he believes God spared him for a purpose, and he believes God spared her for a purpose as well. Alvito gives her a rosary to hold when she has nothing else to hold on to, and that's that. Just a little little more background, I guess, in case we didn't already believe that Mariko has been suffering and wanting to die for a really, really long time. She's 14 years deep into this game at a minimum.
I think also a nice establishing shot for her relationship to the religion. You know, it's
where it came from.
Right,
yeah.
right. And it feels relative because it's like the lot. Oh, it's similar to the way that a lot of people like come to religion is like kind of at a low moment when they need something.
Or through crisis,
you know,
yeah.
As he says, like when you have no words, you just need something to hold on to. And so that I thought that was good because that clearly, that relationship to the religion, to the Christian culture kind of has a role to play later in the episode as well.
Yeah, and I mean, we see him hand her the rosary, which she takes off later in the episode when she's about to seppuku.
Yeah.
Yeah. So after the opening title sequence, we're with Blackthorn, Mariko, and Yabushige approaching Osaka by boat. Yabushige tells Blackthorn to stay close. When they meet with Ishido's men, Ishido's men.
That's the shampoo product.
Right, yeah.
So when they're on their way here, I'm just going to speak to episode 8 because it relates to episode 9 so much. But like Blackthorn goes to Yabushige and he's like, "Yo, me and you need to team up now because we got to take fate into our own."
Torunaga's given up. He's going to die.
So I thought he was talking about like we're going to go make the attack on Osaka, even if this bozo doesn't want to anymore.
Right.
That's not the case. They're there to try to cut a deal.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
They've just, so the them going to Osaka solo or together without Torunaga, they are bailing from their liege lord and they are going to go try to cut a deal for themselves, essentially.
That does appear to be the case, yes.
Right, yeah.
I mean, because they don't roll in like, all right, this is where we're going to attack, right?
Yeah,
they're like,
yeah.
All right, we're preparing for a meeting with
Ishido's men,
the dude who's in charge here.
Okay.
And then Yabushige tries to make that pitch to him, right?
Yep.
So Yabushige, as they roll up, says, "I hate this fucking city." Again, this was kind of easy to see, like episode 1 and 2. I was like, that's my favorite character. He kind of has been throughout. He continues to be like the most interesting dude, Yabushige does.
He
does a lot of sighing.
They really suck us in though, and then they shit on our heads.
I know, dude, it's brutal. So as they walk into the city, Mariko tells Blackthorn that a member of every noble family is being held hostage in Osaka by Ishido, so that no one can oppose him. Just to give us like some clarity around like
I appreciated that. Yeah. They've got this. He's got this shadow hostage situation going on where he's invited like or kind of coerced members of all of these families into Osaka Castle where they are not really free to leave.
Right.
And by doing that, he has control over all the families.
And all he has to do is not admit that they're hostages.
Right. Yeah.
It seems kind of fucking stupid.
Yeah,
But it's, you know, it's a loophole in their whole honor code that he's found, I guess. Yabushige tells Blackthorn they will meet Ishido tomorrow. And they will make their proposal then. And Mariko, like, steps up to be like, all right, I'm going to translate. And he's like, no. I want me and this dude to talk face to face. No one else. I almost get the feeling Yabushige does not trust Mariko to translate honestly, because even on the boat, he's like,
Yeah.
Hey, did you translate that correctly?
Right.
She's like, yes, I did. Next opportunity for translation. He's like, no, I got this. And they do seem to make some kind of successful communication between each other, Yabushige and Blackthorn. Blackthorn has picked up enough Japanese to follow somewhat. And Blackthorn then thanks Yabushige in English for trusting him. And he says, when I deliver to you the Catholic gold, you won't regret it. Which I was like,
yeah.
Okay, so they clearly had a conversation off screen that we weren't privy to about, like, in addition to what they're doing here, trying to strike a deal with Ishido. It seems like Blackthorn was like, and also, I'm going to take out that fucking black ship and we'll get all that gold.
I don't know.
Something else that we don't know about there regarding Catholic gold. Blackthorn and Yabushige.
That was a weird, I didn't understand why he drops that line in there. And
no
also,
idea.
Yabushige knows no English. So there's no way he knows what that guy
said. No, he didn't have a clue.
Yeah.
He just lies. He's like, yes, of course. So Mariko meets with Torunaga's wives and gives them a message of some kind. We don't get to be privy to this message either. Just hands it to them. And one of his wives says, let's hope this works, in response to that message, which would lead me to believe that this is Torunaga's plan that Mariko is aware of and is now telling his wives about.
I think it is literally the plan that Mariko carries out in this episode.
but I'm still not clear on what that was exactly, which we can get to.
Yeah.
We can get to. Anyway, but she hands that message to Torunaga's, I guess his main bitch. It's like his older wife.
His older wife.
You know?
Yeah,
not the one that was pregnant earlier in the season. Father Alvito meets with Dell'Acqua. It's the priest who oversees all the Jesuit missionaries in Japan. And they discuss the heretic Blackthorn's return to Osaka. Remember, these Christians are heavily invested in trying to kill this guy, Blackthorn, because he's a heretic. And Dell'Acqua thinks Torunaga is planning something. And remember, okay, back to Hiramatsu's scene. Torunaga's like, we had to let him kill himself in front of everybody so that they will fully buy in.
Yeah.
And Torunaga tells Alvito, you can build a church in Edo if you go back to Osaka and tell them what you saw here.
Yeah.
So this is Alvito doing that, and he tries to convince Dell'Acqua that Torunaga has given up, tells him, hey, his main man, his bestie, killed himself right in front of him, and Dell'Acqua says Alvito is blind to their trickery.
Yeah.
Alvito's like, this felt different. His most loyal vassal killed himself right in front of him. And Dell'Acqua's like, no, no, war is coming. So what the fuck? Did it not work?
Yeah, so that this was, yes. So he, Alvito, having these moments where he's like, man, I don't know, his most highly touted, closest confidant, vassal, like,
he's, you know, gone.
Seppuku'd himself right there in the dojo, and it was wild, and this dude's definitely done for. Yeah, and then, like you
said, this guy sees right through it.
Dell'Acqua was like, nah, war's coming. So, I don't know.
Man, that was a lot of drama and sacrifice for this to not work at all.
Maybe the priest, maybe the Portuguese, maybe they just have a little bit more clarity because they are outsiders to the culture, and so they can, they're not just taking it, like, all, like, so, you know, for what it is. You know, like, maybe for Ishido and for the other regents, maybe they'll hear about this and take it all very seriously because they know what it all means. But we get none of that. We get none of that in this episode.
Nothing.
We get no other regents or no other people being like, no, I really think Torunaga, this guy is cooked.
He's packing it up.
Because of what happened with Hiramatsu. No, there's none of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. So, at no point are we given any scene that leads us to believe that Ishido or Lady Ochiba or anyone here in Osaka is like, damn, it's crazy that Torunaga's just given up.
Right. Right.
So made episode 8 feel a little weird watching episode 9 and not getting some kind of payoff for that huge moment and sacrifice of a character that we kind of grew to love, and now he's fucking gone for seemingly no reason. Yabushige attempts to teach Blackthorn how to properly bow before they meet with Ishido, which is kind of a strange scene because I was like, didn't we cover this back in like episode 2?
Well, he's also been there for like 8 months now, 10 months, whatever
it
is.
He's speaking the language.
The guy's speaking the language,
but his bow's
not there yet.
So I felt like what he did is take his bow and make it less pronounced, like he was going too far with it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the rest of the episode, Blackthorn is just bowing the way he was before.
Right,
so that lesson didn't seem to stick. I didn't know what that was about. Maybe somebody listening or watching can provide us with some further insights there on Patreon, because that was a confusing scene, the bow teaching scene. So they run into Kiyama, one of the Christians on the Council of Regents, right? And Kiyama says Blackthorn will soon be at the mercy of the church as a heretic. He speaks to Blackthorn in English, because a Christian, right? Been taught the language somewhat. Blackthorn kind of mocks him. Kiyama says they have enough pirate merchants in Japan, and Blackthorn's kind arrived too late. Just a kind of a strange back and forth between these two. Kiyama, when Yabushige first walks up with Blackthorn, is like, thank you for returning my hostage.
Mm-hmm.
And Yabushige is like, no, no, not for you. For the big man, Ishido. So I thought Kiyama was going to have some more important role to play in this episode. He's like kind of an important bystander, I guess, but he never actually does anything. It was strange. So Yabushige goes in, surrenders to Ishido. Ishido calls him a traitor. Yabushige offers him Blackthorn as a gift, but Ishido says the heir is, again, he's doing that whole thing like pretending like, I'm not actually in charge. I just speak on behalf of the small boy behind me who's in charge. He says the heir is not interested in barbarians. And so Yabushige is like, well, that didn't work. Blackthorn, let's go sit in the back. We're fucked. And that's it. He's like, it kind of tells him on the way, like, we shot our shot.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was weird. Then Todomariko appears before this same group. before Ishido and Lady Ochiba, who's sitting, you know, 10 feet to his left, Mariko congratulates them on their engagement. She says Torunaga is still mourning the death of his son when they ask for an update on, like, his journey from Edo to here. And Ishido kind of blows off his dead son. He's like, he has others, which I still took as, like, a hat tip to, like, one of them is sitting behind you. I still think the heir is going to be Torunaga's kid. I swear to God that's coming.
All right. I'm into it.
Yeah. And, okay, so just important context. Torunaga, end of episode 8, Todomariko, are you ready to finally perform your duty?
Right.
She's there now.
Yep, yep.
Doing whatever it is he has asked her to do, which we will try to figure out over the course of the next 30 minutes or so. Ochiba asks Mariko if she remembers how they used to compete in poetry competitions. Right? We get into their, you know, past history a little bit. She says they're having one of these poetry competitions tonight and asks if Mariko would choose the first line. So I'm guessing these poetry competitions are like, one person says a line, then the next person has to build off of that.
So we see this happen in episode 8. Mariko and Torunaga,
they do it.
Do a little back and forth, and that's them doing.
That's a freestyle.
It's a little poetry freestyle.
Okay.
Yes, yes. And that's why Torunaga is like at the end, he's like, damn, you got me. I could never hope to be as good as you.
I'm good, but you're better.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so the line she gives them to start their poetry slam later is, while the snow remains, veiled in the haze of cold evening, a leafless branch. That was it.
Say it again.
While the snow remains, excuse me, veiled in the haze of cold evening, a leafless branch.
Yeah.
Deep.
It is deep. I feel like it's got to relate to what's happening somehow, because they keep talking about it later. Like, Yamashige's like, why would you talk about a cold leafless branch in the springtime?
Right.
Somebody else mentions it.
Lady Ochiba seems to think the leafless branch is her.
It's somebody. It's like you're dead inside. You're not growing anything.
And they're like,
stopped evolving.
Right. And they're like, see, Barrett, really digging in there. You're a poetry pro. Poetry pro. So they're like, that was great. Thanks for the first line. Can't wait to see what else you come up with later at the competition. She's like, actually, unfortunately, I won't be competing in the poetry slam because I have to return to Edo with Torunaga's wives. And she plays this loophole card here.
Gasp.
Where she's like,
pearl clutch.
Whatever you say actually doesn't matter because I am beholden to my liege lord's orders. They override your orders, and until you do whatever you're going to do with him, that's the way of things.
Yeah.
So Ishido protests. Mariko gets aggressive. She's like, and this is in front of a bunch of people, right? It's very awkward. They go back and forth repeatedly. She reminds Ishido of her family line that, you know, that she comes from a line of samurais for thousands of years.
Yeah, invokes the name of her father who killed Lady Ochiba Nokato's dad.
Right.
Yeah.
Says she will never be held captive or hostage or confined. Again, really strong scene here, all in all.
Yeah.
But Ishido kind of leaves it at like, whatever, we're going to have to meet. I'll meet with the council. Fuck out of here. She leaves, right? And is very determined that she is going to walk out of this place and that no one can stop her, and she has to follow Torunaga's orders. So Yabushige freaks out on him, like, what the fuck were you doing? You're going to get us all killed? This is, what is wrong with you? He thinks both Mariko and Blackthorn are aware of Torunaga's plan and that he's just been left in the dark. He's frustrated. He's freaking out. He's grunting a lot. It's very entertaining stuff. Yabushige gets really cartoonish when he's scared. He didn't like her leafless branch poem, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
So he storms off. Mariko asks Blackthorn not to involve himself in what she is about to do for the sake of everything they have been through. And that last part is a quote. For the sake of everything we have been through.
Right.
Do not involve yourself. Then Mariko's son comes and asks her to remain in Osaka or she will be held. I'm assuming this is the kid she was pregnant with in the opening cold open thing.
Yeah.
He says, if you try to leave, you're going to be held. And if you are disgraced, I am no longer your son. Basically, I will disown you if you do this.
I thought this scene should have been cut. This was... We
could have done without it.
There's been no indication that Mariko and Buntaro have a son, I don't think. Has that been mentioned a single time?
I don't think so.
It was a surprise to me. We've not seen this kid yet. He has mattered zip zero, stingy with De Niro.
Right.
She's hanging out with Torunaga and Anjin all day long, every day. She's not doing any mothering of any type.
They should have given us some more context if they wanted this scene to hit.
Yeah. So this is like, okay, now you're just like, it's the penultimate episode and you're just dropping a 14-year-old kid that she has in
Look,
my lap?
I get the point. They're like trying to show how much she's sacrificing by following Torunaga's orders and attempting to leave the city, that like she puts that above everything, even her own kid possibly disowning her. But like you said, the reason it didn't hit, we don't think she necessarily cares about the kid disowning
her. Well, and he certainly doesn't matter to us as the audience, because we've gotten no scenes, no time, no evidence that he exists, no anything with him.
Yeah.
And then we're just supposed to be, like, affected by the fact that her teenage son is sitting there being like, I'm going to disown you, Mom.
Yeah.
It's like, well, y'all don't seem to spend that much time together anyway, and this guy's just a kid. It's not like he's, you know, he's an adolescent. Like, he's still in his formative years, and, like, you're not around anyway, so.
Right.
I don't know. It's just like it was a weird thing to drop on us in the penultimate episode, I thought. And then he's just sitting there later. He's just sitting
in
the
crowd.
He just
watches, yeah.
No, I mean, like, I know that this is, we're playing into the culture here. This is not like completely out of the ordinary. That just all felt like I didn't get anything from that, and I just thought it could have been cut.
Yeah, it probably could have been. It was a little weird. I mean, he says like, he's a Christian because he's being brought up by, like, Kiyama, the dude who was speaking English to Blackthorn earlier.
Yes.
That Kiyama has picked a bride for him.
Yeah.
And he's sick of her family and their name and the history and the disgrace, and he wants to get out from under her, kind of thing.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, like, I think your main point was the same thing I felt. I was like, Who are you? Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I just just didn't really care. I thought Mariko did a solid job. She was clearly a little broken up by this. She gets a little emotional.
Mm-hmm.
But all in all, we could have probably done without that. So the next day, Tota Mariko attempts to leave Osaka with Torunaga's wives and a squad of samurai soldiers. As seemingly everyone but Ishido watches on.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's up there. All the other regents, Lady Ochiba's up there. I don't know where Ishido was, but everybody's just watching this happen, and it does not go particularly well.
No.
All the samurai are killed, to the point that Mariko's like, fine, I'll fight. She picks up that big, long weapon that, you know, we've seen her kick ass with in the past, wears herself out, because there's 20 of them, and they're like, lady, what are you doing? And then she says, it is not possible to fight through all these men. We must go back. However, these men have prevented me from doing my duty to my liege lord, and I cannot live with the offense. I will take my life at sunset. And then she looks up at Lord Kiyama, and she's like, as a Christian, you understand it is a mortal sin to take my own life. I formally ask that you be my second, which feels like a loophole.
It is a loophole.
That it's the loophole. Lord Almighty might not agree with.
Yeah. Kind of like, it's like the Mormon soak.
Yeah.
Right. It's that type of loophole where you're like, I don't know about that.
Pretty sure.
But yeah.
Still counts. You're killing yourself. You know what I mean?
But yeah, I guess if, you know, you don't deliver the death blow, somebody else delivers the actual death blow.
You're getting by on a technicality.
Then you're getting by on a technicality.
Still getting into heaven on the technicality. Huh? Yeah, love that.
Yeah.
Love that for her anyway. So yeah, this scene was pretty easy to put it down into a couple of sentences, but it was really, really tense. It was a really strong scene. I had no idea what was about to happen.
Yeah.
And in the end, it was sad because I'm like, God, we're back to this lady killing herself again.
Yeah. Kind of a theme here.
Yeah. So the Council of Regents meets to discuss the situation with Mariko. Some of them think she's bluffing. Lady Ochiba assures them she is not, and explains that this is Mariko's vengeance on fate. And I thought this was a really cool explanation and really showed how much this woman understands Mariko.
Mm-hmm.
It's her vengeance on fate that she will die to be free of the disgrace that has burdened her, and then all of Osaka will be disgraced for letting her die, which seems like a problem. Like, the whole fucking city would be disgraced? Can't have that, Barrett. She says, quote, if you allow her to die, there will be revolt from every high family in Osaka. If you allow her to leave, the hostages will also demand to leave. So it's a real pickle.
Yeah.
She has put Ishido in here. Clearly, that was the plan.
That's the plan. Yep.
But beyond that, a lot of confusion sets in for your boy.
Yes.
For me. Okay. I'm your boy.
Yeah.
So next, Blackthorn is summoned for an audience with the heir, which it turns out is really just an audience with Lady Ochiba, and the whole thing is a ruse so Ochiba can meet with his translator, Mariko, right? Ochiba tells Mariko, these games must stop, and Mariko's like, I'm not playing. It's kind of a funny dialogue between the two
of
them.
You're the only one that can stop the games, you accuse me of playing.
Exactly. So Ochiba talks about their childhood together, how Mariko was always... Her happiness is how she describes her. Like, this was her best friend. Yeah. They were sisters.
They were sisters, yeah.
How she always did everything right until one day she was sent away, and then since then it has been impossible for Ochiba to recognize Mariko because she just wanted to be a martyr, right, for her father and her family name. Ochiba says she doesn't have the power to do what Mariko is insisting she do, stop all these games. And she says... I don't exist except to protect my son. So just like we already had that insight a little bit of Ochiba and what she's doing out here. So Mariko's about to leave. She turns and says, accepting death isn't surrender. Flowers are only flowers because they fall. I didn't love that. I was like...
Because you're a big fake flowers guy?
Maybe I'm just not that good at poetry, but like flowers are flowers... Only because the implication is that flowers are only flowers because they eventually die, right?
Uh-huh.
And that the enjoyment is in the interim. Like yeah, I just didn't. Yeah, yeah. Okay, that's fine. I guess
it's just it's like a it was another way of phrasing the concept that like happiness is happiness because there's also tragedy and sadness,
okay.
Or life is only life because there is also death.
Yeah,
there is no the enjoyment of life is because it's short, is because it's fleeting, because
it will end.
Because it will end.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
That's
okay.
essentially what she's saying in a kind of clipped way.
All right. Well, the meeting ends and Mariko and Blackthorn leave. Blackthorn tells Mariko that Torunaga is taking advantage of her loyalty, that her life is worth more than this, that Torunaga has thousands of soldiers and vassals at his disposal. She doesn't need to kill herself. But she says life and death are the same. Both can have value and purpose. And he's like, yeah, sure, but only one is permanent. And Mariko says this is the very reason her father kept her alive, so that she could, you know, do this. And Blackthorn begs her to live. He says, if not for God or for yourself, then perhaps I can convince you to live for me. And she, like, takes his hand. She's very touched by this.
Mm-hmm.
But then she just walks off.
Yeah.
So.
It's a no.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a very kind. Gentle no.
Yes.
Yabushige's assistant, that dude he's just, like, demeaning all the time, calling an idiot. Yeah. Tells him that Lord, he like walks up. This is a really quick scene. You're like, whoa, what was that? He walks up and he's like, Lord Ishido has accepted your offer of service instead of death, but he has a request. And Yabushige is like, ugh. Because he knows the request is going to be shitty. He's going to have to do something he doesn't really want to do. That moment sucked because you're like, fuck this guy, man. He can't stop flip flopping back and forth.
Just be
loyal. Pick a fucking side. So we don't get to find out what that is immediately. It kind of hangs in the air. Mariko gives confession to Father Alvito in preparation for the end of her life. And then as the sun sets, Tota Mariko enters the seppuku room specifically for this.
Yeah.
She leaves a poem as her final statement. She tells Lord Kiyama to come forward as her second, but like one of Torunaga's wives is like,
he's not here.
He didn't show up.
Yeah.
So she has no second. Blackthorn volunteers as her second, which you probably saw coming.
Yep.
At that point, you're just like, oh God, this is going to be so brutal. So just as she's about to commit the coup, Ishido storms in, throws some exit visas at her feet, and tells her she's free to leave in the morning.
Okay. Did you think she was going to plunge that knife in
her heart? I thought it was over.
Thought it was over for her.
I thought that was going to be it.
And we were going back-to-back seppukus of two major characters, essentially.
Yes. I was really pissed off because I was still, and still am as we speak, struggling to figure out how this all plays into things in terms of Torunaga strategically.
Yeah.
And I really like Tota Mariko. I think she's, you know,
I
said, I think last week when you were out, I was like, she's basically like character one. If Torunaga and Blackthorn are the main characters, she's 1B.
Right.
She's right there.
Yeah. She's right there.
And done a lot of great character building with her. There's a lot of depth to her.
Yeah. So when she's got that, the longer she waits with that knife,
the more you knew it wasn't going to happen.
The more I was like, I'm not sure. This is, but great job of. You know, just from a TV making standpoint, the Hiramatsu death in the prior episode definitely sets you up to believe that this could happen in this moment.
Right.
So you are at the edge of your seat wondering which direction they're going to go here. And that's the key, because you never want to feel like, or it's always kind of annoying, or the stakes feel lower when you know a character has plot armor, right? When you know that the character is
like, there's no way this person's going to die right here.
And so that was nicely done, to have you right there wondering what was going to happen. And then 11th hour, Shido comes in and drops the papes.
Weird moment after he does that. She kind of like collapses almost in relief. Like, fuck.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that was intense. Man, he really, like, almost like she knew she was forcing his hand to come and give her these papers.
Right.
Like, that, I don't know. That was a tough read, and it got even tougher because of the end of the episode. But immediately after, Ishido was like, you can leave in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Like, three other women in the room are like, I want to go. I want to go too.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, why wouldn't you be able to? You're totally not hostages, and you can all apply for exit visas of your own.
Yeah, yeah.
Apply for the permits. I'm just joking when I call them exit visas. I've seen Casablanca too many times. But Ochiba had told him, this is what's going to happen. If you let her go, all these other ladies are going to want to bounce.
You big film buff.
I know.
Just crushing Casablanca over there.
What a cinephile. Ishido says no one is hostages in this castle, that they can all apply for permits to leave. And then that night, as Mariko prepares to sleep, Blackthorn enters the room, and you know what time it is. It's pillow time. This episode is sponsored by Blue Chew. Fellow aging samurai, remember the days when you were always ready to go? Now you can increase your performance and get that extra confidence when it's time for some passionate pillowing. Listen up. BlueChew.com. Blue Chew is a unique online service that delivers the same active ingredients as Viagra, Cialis, and Levitra, but in chewable tablets and at a fraction of the cost. You can take them anytime, day or night, so you can plan ahead or be ready whenever an opportunity arises. The process is simple. Sign up at BlueChew.com. Consult with one of their licensed medical providers, and once you're approved, you'll receive your prescription within days. The best part, it's all done online, so no weird visits to the doctor's office. No awkward conversations and no waiting in line at the pharmacy. Blue Chew's tablets are made in the USA and prepared and shipped directly to your door in discreet packaging, I would add. I've used Blue Chew's tablets several times and personally achieved an erection harder than the rock in Blackthorn's garden. If you're looking for more confidence, if you're looking to make a lasting impression, if you're in the market for the best pillow sesh of your life, Blue Chew could be the answer for you too. Blue Chew wants to help you have better sex. Discover your options at BlueChew.com. Chew it and do it, and we've got a special deal just for the Clam Fam. Try Blue Chew free when you use our promo code OCC at checkout. Just pay $5 in shipping. That's BlueChew.com. Promo code OCC to receive your first month free. Visit BlueChew.com for more details and important safety information, and we thank Blue Chew for sponsoring the podcast. And that is how you do an ad.
That is how you do it. That was a beautiful segue.
I'm a professional.
Wonderful that this scene and this ad partner
fit together so perfectly. So Mariko and Blackthorn share another night of passion, and it seems her life is saved, and we're all very happy about this. Very, very momentarily. unfortunately, Yabushige then betrays Toranaga.
Judas!
Kills one of his men. Opens the gates to their specific area of the castle.
Okay, so unfortunately, the Shogun runners, they went Dark Knight battle on us here.
Can't see shit,
and you can't see shit. They just dropped all the lights, and this was very, very difficult to tell what was going on.
Yeah, because at first I thought Torinaga's people were storming the castle.
Yeah, so I think, by the way, was it you and I earlier this season having conversations about the difference between, we were talking about ninjas versus samurai.
Yeah.
Well, boom, here are the ninjas.
Yep, they showed up.
Here they are. Yes.
They're called shinobi.
Shinobi.
Same thing as ninjas, though.
That's tight.
It's just what they call them.
Wasn't that the Sega video game? Wasn't it called Shinobi? I think there was a video game called Shinobi.
That word struck me as super familiar, but I didn't know why.
Shinobi. I think that's a Sega game.
Yeah, 1987.
Yeah.
It's quite the fucking throwback. 1987 video game produced by Sega. Good memory on this kid.
Okay, so this is Toranaga's section, nobody else's. They're not taking out anybody else, right? Because, like, at first I thought that they were going in for all the families. Like, they were, like,
full wipeout.
All these people that just asked for their permits were just taking them all out.
Right.
But I think this is just Torunaga's zone.
Yes.
So it's his men, it's his samurai, it's... And then they're obviously going for Mariko.
I think so.
But yes.
That part was difficult to tell.
But Yabushige has opened up the gates. He is the... He is the Judas. He is the Judas.
Yeah.
He is the traitor. He is letting all of these people in to take out essentially everybody here. Nobody is off limits. And
it was just odd because, like, look, Ishido controls the whole city.
Right.
What is there? Some... Like, why did he need Yabushige was my question. I was like, I get it. I get that Yabushige was going around and, like, taking out some key guards. That's it.
I think that's it.
Okay.
It's just, it gave them
just easy
super
access.
Easy access,
yeah.
Super easy entry.
So they can get in, get out.
Get in, get out. Nobody can prepare. There's no, like, they don't have to kill that one guard who, like, screams bloody murder and alerts everybody to wake up and,
right.
Like, and start scattering or whatever. My question here is, how is this flipping the script? How is this helping Ishido, right? Because what they didn't want, the two options previously presented were bad. Either Mariko martyrs herself and kills herself and everybody is mad and there's a revolt because they didn't let her leave. Or they let her leave and everybody else has to leave too, and then they lose their leverage.
Right.
So, but how is this any different than Mariko killing herself?
Big
Isn't
question.
Everybody going to know that
Ishido
did this?
So my read is it was like in the mafia when they're like, we don't want to use our own people for this. We're going to contract this out so that no one can actually connect it back to us, even if it's a little obvious who it was. There's no way to connect it to us. So he went with the shinobi, with the ninjas. It's not like his samurai running up in there with their, you know, Ishido clothes on. It's these random ninjas. So they could just be like, oh my God, what a shame. But everyone in here is dead. What happened?
So, okay, right. So that
was my read anyway.
Well, that's kind of where I landed too. Like, I guess they're just going to do this with the shinobi, dead of night. Everybody's wiped out, and then they're going to wake up in the morning, and they'll at least have, like, they can shrug their shoulders and be like, I don't know what happened.
Like, plausible deniability,
right.
Yeah.
And that will...
But that seems so fucking dumb.
And that will instill the fear back in everybody to not leave and to not revolt.
Fall back in line, yeah.
I guess...
If you apply for those permits, you're dead.
You're dead.
Yeah, right.
Right.
But it was so confusing to watch unfold because it was like, are they only killing soldiers? Because they give us a very clear cut scene where one of the assassins, like, leans over and is like, nope, that's a woman, and moves on to the next. Doesn't kill.
Oh, is that right?
The woman. Yeah.
Oh, I thought they were just murking everybody.
Nah, they were picking and choosing. It seemed like only the soldiers were being taken out.
Again, I could not see very much.
Yeah. I had to change the brightness my television just to, like, get a clear cut view of what was happening here. But yeah, so, like, Blackthorn and Mariko, they wake up, fight off some shinobi. Mariko, he's like, Blackthorn's like, who the hell are these guys? She says, they're the shinobi, which I Googled. And same thing as a ninja. She says, they came for me.
Yep.
So I have to believe that she knows what she's talking about.
Yeah.
And that
this is
directly, like, you know, because, they fight their way outside. Mariko, or one of Torunaga's wives, is like, it's Ishido. He'll never let us leave alive, which is when you're supposed to be like, oh, this is in response to the whole... What I guess what I don't get is, like, why the whole song and dance from Ishido? Why give him the permit and then that night send in all these ninjas? I guess that's his way of making it look like it wasn't him. Like, I just gave them permission to leave. Why would I then kill them? That doesn't make any sense. You know what I mean? It's just like,
he already has such
a grip on this whole area. I don't know why he's concerned with the optics at this point.
Same.
That's confusing.
It seems like this could still lead to a revolt from the high families.
Right. So, okay, let's talk about how it ends. They fight their way outside to a storehouse with heavy doors. They shut themselves inside. It's Blackthorn, Mariko, Yabushige the traitor, and Torunaga's wives. Of course, they have no idea Yabushige has betrayed them at this point.
Right.
Then you can hear through the door, they're like, prepare the fuse. And Mariko's like, oh shit, they're going to blow the door open.
Yeah.
Blackthorn is like, I'm going to push this big box in front of the door because that somehow will help.
Yeah.
He tries to get Yabushige to help him. Yabushige is like, nah, sorry, son, you're on your own. And then Mariko is like, Blackthorn, she says, quote, let it come, like death, let it, like, wash over you. And then she just puts herself in front of the door, stretches her arms out and she says, Akechi Mariko protests this shameful attack by Lord Ishido and by my death. And then boom, door blows door out. Explodes, they give us a shot of like her body being thrust forward, right? Yeah. Roll credits.
Yeah.
First thing, is she dead?
Yeah.
So she's gone.
Yes.
What did that accomplish? What the hell did Torunaga get out of this? I don't understand how he's better off today than he was yesterday.
I tend to agree with you. I think when I'm trying to sort this out, I think that they are counting on the revolt of high families.
Okay.
I think that forcing Ishido's hand to exert this type of force and control on people will finally lead the Kitayama, is that his name? The Christian one?
Kiyama.
Kiyama. Like, I think that they are hoping to push people to Torunaga's side. That's all I can come
Damn,
up with.
Damn, this is a lot of shit just to accomplish that.
Because, yes, but even if that's accurate, I still think that these are just big reaches that we're having to make here, and I don't totally understand Torunaga's plan, and there's a lot that's not totally computing yet. As I mentioned kind of at the beginning of the episode, it's weird to have to let, like, two of your most important people essentially off themselves.
Yeah.
So, but I guess he is hoping that because they are important people, because they are high-ranking, significant individuals, that this will lead to people kind of throwing down the gloves and being like, all right, enough. Like, we can't let this dude roll over us this.
Yeah, and I keep going back to the line that Torunaga delivers when he's trying to convince Hiromatsu and Yabushige and Bontaro and Mariko and his generals in Edo that he's surrendering. He says, no one family or clan is more important than or above Japan.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think his, like, that was almost like...
Yeah.
That's more a message to Hiromatsu and Toda Mariko about the sacrifice they will have to make
in
order for them to save Japan. Because the idea, I think, in Torunaga's head, and this is kind of something that they haven't totally successfully communicated to us as an audience, is that if Ishido is in charge, Japan is doomed. Because, like, the only reason I think he's a terrible guy is because Torunaga's telling me that. We haven't really seen... I mean, he's done some shady, shitty stuff, but don't get me wrong. Like, it seems like most... leaders of most countries
just corrupt
do.
And shit.
Right. Yeah. So, like, I don't think that may be a piece that's missing here for us. Is I'm like, God,
I mean, he's not ruling peacefully. He is essentially taking control.
Right.
Right. So he's in that way. He's kind of a dictator or authoritarian. But
yeah, and I mean, I get it. It's just like God. On the other hand, it's like you're gonna lose all of your best people, those closest to you, in order to save. I guess everyone else.
As we're sorting through this, let's go back to a few other lines. There's one early on in this season, talking about Ishido's move for power, where it's essentially like it's Torunaga's time now. He's called up to the plate to essentially have his head removed and remove him from the picture.
Right.
But all these other regents, it will eventually be them too as he consolidates power. So that's a thing. And then it's like, so I think those are important because Ishido continues to take more and more and more.
Yeah.
And eventually, again, like, we're also worried about the heir.
Right.
Because he's right now, he still would come to power in, I don't know, a few years probably.
Yeah.
So I think eventually for Ishido to fully own the power, he will have to take out the heir as well. So I think that's why Ishido is a bad guy, and that's why we're
trying to get rid of
maybe
him.
Laying these tracks that, like, to essentially convince the broader, high ranking families overall that they have to put an end to this guy, otherwise they're all screwed.
Yeah, it just felt like Kiyama already was pretty aware of that. They've had multiple lines over the past few episodes.
Yeah, we'll never leave this castle. Like,
we're all hostages now.
We're all hostages. Yes,
they've got their family members in there and shit. So it just feels like there should have been another way. I mean, I'm nitpicking because this is two of my favorite characters are now dead.
Yeah, it's
and
tough.
I'm sitting here like, for what? I hope and need the payoff to be worth it, right? Yeah. But that's how I felt last week after Hiramatsu went down. I was like, all right, sick. We're going to get something in episode 9 that's going to make me feel like this is justified. And then after episode 9 ends, I'm like, well, God damn it. Now there's another important character that I really enjoyed is now gone. And I still don't understand how it's like, because like, where, like, just shot in the dark, what the fuck happens next week? Like, are the ninjas going to go, oh shit, we blew the doors open and we killed her. Well, now we can't kill everyone else in the storage house? Like, the wives and Yabushige and Blackthorn, are they all screwed? Like, where does that go?
Yeah, I don't know. Let me say this. Okay, two things. One, this episode was called Crimson Sky.
Yeah.
Well, Crimson Sky, as we knew it, definitely did not happen.
Right.
So what was the Crimson Sky about this episode? Like, it's like Crimson Sky changed, right? It's like this was the plan. So do we get some other, like, do you know what I mean?
The title, like, of the episode is what made me think when all these dudes started running in. Uh-huh. I was like, oh, Torunaga's doing Crimson Sky with his ninjas.
Yeah.
But that didn't make sense the conversation with Yabushige beforehand.
So I don't think that it will just be Torunaga trying to pull off original Crimson Sky next week, because this episode was already called Crimson Sky. So it's like Crimson Sky changed. The other thing that I will say, and this is not going to be spoilery, but I couldn't help myself. I read the brief description for the finale on Hulu, and all it says is that, like, Blackthorn comes to a deeper understanding of Torunaga's plan.
That's not helpful.
But at least does that mean
we will?
Yeah, I'm throwing that out there
a ray of hope.
Because at least the show seems to be indicating that that's where we're going next, is for the plan to finally unfold and
come to fruition
in this final episode. Which, again, like, people are probably saying, yeah, duh, Captain Obvious, it's the last episode of the show.
Well, yeah.
Hopefully, we would understand the plan by the end. But I think that. It's just confirming that the last episode will be, I think, the culmination of this plan.
The payoff.
But just to go back to the Mariko thing, because you mentioned, I think you wanted to talk a little bit more about this. I think she is relieved when she does not have to go out in the way that she was going to have to do it. Now, she had indicated that she would be happy to do it in this way other times. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
She pulls out the sword in front of Torunaga at least once.
Like, and, let me kill myself.
You know, she's like, I'm ready. Let me just do this.
Yeah.
But then I think she finally gets there, and maybe it's because she's got Blackthorn behind her, having to second. Maybe it's because of the way that it's all unfolded and just everything that's happened and everything that's put together. But I think in that moment she doesn't want to do it. She doesn't want to have to do it. Fast forward a few hours, and I think that moment to martyr herself essentially presents in a much more like palatable way for her, almost, where it's not at her hand,
right?
And I think the duty comes back into play. I think she has closure with Blackthorn at that moment. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that's because it was weird to, like, or not weird, but maybe kind of surprising. To have her saved, to have her execution stayed, essentially.
And then die immediately.
And then
after.
she dies immediately after that. But I think it's
frustrating. Yeah.
Narratively, it gives us more clarity on the way and that she wants to go out and for what purpose. And then also how meaningful maybe Blackthorn asking her to live for him was. Because we do get that moment where she doesn't give him any words, but they do have that connection. And then they obviously are able to make the physical one more time.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
The one thing, though, Yabushige yells out, and they clearly wanted us to believe this. He yells out, that explosion will kill us all.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, when they blow that door off, we're all goners. And then she's like, I shall stand in front of the door.
I think she human shields it, yeah.
And somehow that will protect. You got, like, she's a little lady. I'm not saying.
No, she's very little. Yeah.
I just didn't really, like, I get it, but at the same time, it gave me this feeling like somehow she was sacrificing herself to save the rest of them, but that doesn't, from like a physics standpoint, really make sense to me. Like, how would that stop the blast?
Like, would her 100-pound body actually do much?
Right. Yeah, that was a little weird. It was just, like, it was powerful stuff. I'm just trying to make sense of of why I had to watch this woman die really twice in a 20-minute span, basically. Because she might as well have been dead from the seppuku. I was fucking sweating bullets. It was that was just a lot to take in. And I just, like, this is several weeks in a row where I'm like, what is this old man planning? Well, he didn't even show his fucking face. Torunaga did not have 1 second of screen time in this episode.
Yeah.
And yet all of this is happening on his behalf. And it was just, it was a lot, man. It was so confusing. And, like, some sick part of me is still hoping that, like, after Torunaga wins, which he very fucking clearly will, that Yabushige still ends up on like, his squad. Like, because Yabushige's treacherous behavior allowed for Mariko's death, which then will cause the families to revolt.
Right.
Like, I don't know, man. I fully expected, like I said, I think in, like, week three, I was like, man, I didn't think we'd get to, like, battle scenes until the very end, and I think we're going to have, like, a whole bunch of battles. Well, we haven't. Like, not classic, you know,
no,
combat.
It's been all more chess moves.
Yeah, so... Yeah. I don't know if we'll get any, like, full-blown army-on-army battles. I don't know if that's... Because what's the setup for that next week?
Right,
so,
yeah,
I'll say this for this show. It does a really good job of leaving me in a place where I have no idea what's coming next, where I do not know what to expect with the opening scenes of next week. I do not know what to expect with the finale on the whole at all. The only thing I expect is that Torunaga wins. Because otherwise, if this show ends, episode 10, and Torunaga loses, and it's just been me watching his entire line and everyone who served him die and suffer, that wouldn't be a very fun TV show.
Yeah, I'm with you. I expect that he does pull something off, but I kind of expect it for a different reason, and that's because, like, episodes 1 through 4 are essentially like, this dude is 40 steps ahead of everybody. He's the master of trickery. He's got spies everywhere.
That's like the whole setup for the show.
He doesn't lose.
Yeah.
And then the next 4 episodes are like, this guy has lost it.
He's getting the shit kicked out of him.
The mojo is gone. He's surrendering. He is now a coward. He's got no moves. He got beat. And then finally, like, his son dying, like, gives him a little bit of leeway. And he's like, shit, I got it back. I got something cooking.
Yeah.
These 49 days have bought me exactly what I needed. I'm back in the saddle, baby. I love it when a plan comes together. And so if now this plan is just a flop,
that would be
all
lame.
His best people had to kill themselves essentially and he loses.
Go like,
then what? So this dude wasn't the master of trickery. He was kind of a dud from the beginning.
The whole show was a lie.
What did we just watch?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's a very good point.
So I do think I like. Yeah. 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 His plan at least needs to be, like, almost successful.
Yeah. Well, I guess we'll see.
What do you think happens to Blackthorn? Think he stays in the Japans? He's got to.
Yeah. Especially after that scene where he, like, finds his men and he's like, y'all are dirty as hell.
Yeah.
I like it. I like my
that
fresh
scene,
clothes.
They just cannot help themselves with those scenes, or maybe it's just not possible, but, like, those scenes are just, like, ripped out of Pirates of the Caribbean. Like, that dude has a face that is in Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. I mean, I don't care how many times Blackthorn or anybody on the internet says they're not pirates. Those are pirates.
Those are pirates. Yeah,
those are pirate merchants, okay? Anyway, Barrett and I will be back later this week, tomorrow, I guess, on patreon.com/oystersclamscockles, taking hotline calls from the Mollusk Militia and further digesting and discussing the penultimate episode of Shogun. Remember, we are available on all the major podcast platforms, but also in full video on youtube.com/@oystersclamscockles for your viewing pleasure. Please subscribe on YouTube. Throw us a like. If you're here on YouTube right now watching, subscribe, like, and comment, if you would, means a lot. Ask a question, tell us something we got wrong in the comments, do whatever you need to do. Shout out to everybody watching on YouTube. We appreciate y'all. For more from me, Ross Bolin, follow me at WRBolin, WRBOLEN on X, formerly known as Twitter, and on the Gram, known as Instagram. Check out the Ross Bolin podcast. Mr. Dudley, where can the people follow you and keep up with the things
you do? I'm on Instagram. I'm on X at Barrett Dudley on both of those platforms.
At Barrett Dudley. Go to bolinmedia.com/shop to grab yourself some merch. Thank you for being here today. Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. One more episode. Really looking forward to Patreon this week to get everybody's reactions and also hearing from y'all on social media. Holler at us, tweet at us, DM us. We love hearing from y'all. We'll be back next week for the finale. Until next time, I love it when a plan comes together.